you. So as you're slowly getting settled, as all parties are aware, the appellant will have 15 minutes for their argument in chief. Respondent will have 15 minutes, and then finally the appellant will have 5 minutes of rebuttal. Whenever you're ready, just slowly approach the podium. You can adjust it to your level up and down, adjust the microphone to your level, and then when you're ready to begin, just please tell us your voice. Please tell us your name in a loud, clear voice.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is R.J. Dietrich. I'm an assistant attorney general, and I represent the appellants, the commissioners of the Department of Health and the Department of Human Services. Now, a respondent at AAF was convicted of promotion of prostitution, and that conviction permanently bars her from serving in certain positions in programs licensed by the Department of Human Services and the Department of Health. Now, a respondent sought expungement of records held by the Department of Human Services and the Department of Health in order to avoid that legislatively imposed permanent bar. Before the district court, respondent conceded that she's not entitled to statutory expungement under Minnesota Statute Chapter 609A, and so the district court exercised its inherent authority to expunge her executive branch records held by the Department of Human Services and the Department of Health. And that order was exceeded the district court's inherent authority, and so I'd ask the court today to reverse that order. Now, generally, the inherent authority of the district court or the courts to expunge records only extends to records held within the judicial branch. And indeed, in MDT 2013 Supreme Court case, the court stated that it had never held that a court could exercise its inherent authority to expunge executive branch records.
Now, are you saying that that is the functional equivalent of a statement that they're categorically cannot exercise inherent authority to expunge a record held by another branch of government?
Not necessarily, Your Honor. I was going to say it appears that MDT may have left the door open for the use of inherent authority to expunge executive branch records, but only in very, very limited circumstances. And again, I think that it would be a very rare situation where that would happen, as the court stated in MDT that it had never held that that could happen. And indeed, this court stated in CWN, a decision from just about a year ago, that the exercise of inherent authority is not appropriate to expunge executive branch records. But like you said, MDT does appear to possibly leave the door open for the use of inherent authority when the retention of the record would seriously infringe the constitutional rights of the person, or when expungement is necessary to performance of a core judicial function. Now, I would argue that neither of those situations applies here. The district court indicated in its order that it was expunging respondent's record in order to prevent an infringement of her right to equal protection. But the district court's order contains no explanation of how respondent was treated differently from similarly situated people, which is a requirement of an equal protection violation. And now on appeal, respondent argues that she's treated differently from similarly situated people because she received a stay of imposition when she pled guilty, stay of imposition of sentence. She argues that if she had received a stay of adjudication, she would be entitled to seek statutory expungement under Chapter 609A, and accordingly she's treated dissimilarly from similarly situated people. But she's not similarly situated to someone who received a stay of adjudication. A person who receives a stay of adjudication, their guilt is not adjudicated, so they don't have a criminal conviction. Respondent was convicted of promotion of prostitution, as we stand here today, still stands convicted of that offense. Also, a stay of adjudication can only be imposed in very rare circumstances. Either the prosecutor has to consent, or there has to be a finding that it's necessary in the interest of justice because the prosecutor abused his or her discretion in exercising the charging function. There's no reason to believe that that's present here. So she's not similarly situated to someone in that situation. Now, she...
But is there something to, I mean, I know the second basis on which inherent judicial authority may be exercised is if it is necessary to a core judicial function. And maybe this is a, I'm talking about a judicial and a prosecutorial function, but I mean, doesn't the outcome in this case in some respects impede a district court's ability to stay adjudication versus stay imposition of a sentence? Because it would have these ramifications down the road? I mean, can an argument be made along those lines?
I don't believe so, Your Honor. I mean, she didn't receive a stay of imposition. And, you know, perhaps that could have...
Didn't receive a stay of adjudication.
A stay of adjudication, yes. I'm sorry. That's what I meant to say. So I don't see how that...
That's the distinction that is the basis of the denial or her inability to receive expungement. And that traces back to, I guess, an exercise of discretion by the district court. Why wouldn't the district court be able to say that it should be able to exercise its inherent authority because, in fact, its ability to stay in position or stay adjudication is impeded if it is not allowed to exercise discretion here to expunge?
Well, Your Honor, as I said, the district court can only stay adjudication in very rare circumstances. Either the prosecutor has to consent or there has to be this abuse of the charging function, and I don't see any reason to believe that that was the case here. Obviously, the prosecutor didn't consent, otherwise she'd have a stay of adjudication, and the district court didn't find that that there was an abuse of the charging function, and so the district court didn't stay adjudication. So,
but what about the even more fundamental right of a district court to decide a case in front of it based on the law and the circumstances? And here you have very compelling circumstances by this particular petitioner. It seems to me someone who's a criminal offense was years in the past, someone who's in fact worked successfully in the career for which she seeks qualification. Why wouldn't this be a case where just those sorts of circumstances should provide a district court with inherent authority to make a decision on its expungement?
Well, Your Honor, now it sounds like you're talking about, which I believe is also cited in the district court's order as well as in a respondent's brief, is the ability of the district court to use its inherent authority to remedy unfairness. And State versus CA is the case that's cited by respondent for that proposition. And in that case, the Supreme Court didn't even expunge executive branch records. It was just judicial branch records. But the unfairness also in that case stemmed from the fact that the conviction of the individual involved had been set aside. And so they actually weren't convicted, and that was the unfairness, that conviction would still be out there, that record would still be out there, even though they weren't convicted. Again, here, respondent stands convicted of promotion of prostitution. Also, Your Honor, this court and the Minnesota Supreme Court has stated that it's not appropriate for the district court to exercise its inherent authority in order to expunge executive branch records when doing so would override a legislative policy judgment. And here we have a situation where first, in Chapter 609A, the Minnesota legislature determined that respondent isn't entitled to expungement of executive branch records under that statute. And then maybe more importantly, we have a situation where the legislature has determined that that conviction permanently disqualifies respondent from serving in these certain licensed programs. And this court stated, I believe, in State versus MLA, that it would not be appropriate for the district court to exercise its inherent authority in that case to expunge records because that would prohibit the Department of Human Services from exercising its statutorily imposed duty to conduct background studies. And also, the Supreme Court has stated very clearly, and this court has as well, that it's not appropriate to exercise inherent authority in order to help an individual gain an employment advantage or gain a specific job, because that's not a core judicial function. And so that's not a basis for exercising inherent authority. So, Your Honors, I would ask here on behalf of the Commissioners of Health and the Commissioner of Human Services that this court reverse the order of the district court, the expungement order of the district court, because the district court exceeded its inherent authority in this case. And if there aren't any more questions, I'll yield the rest of my time.
Thank you very much, Mr. Dietrich. You will have rebuttal. We'll hear from counsel for the respondent, please.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. May it please the court. My name is Brian Dillon. To my left at counsel table is my colleague Amy Erickson. We're here on behalf of the respondent who is in the courtroom today over my shoulder to the right. I'll address the legal issues that are important in this case, but first I think it's important to take a little bit of time and talk about the facts. All of these inherent authority expungement cases, which I know this court is familiar with, turn on facts. These are real people who are seeking expungement for real reasons, and I think the facts in this case are very, very different from any inherent authority expungement case coming out of Minnesota that I've ever read. My client was charged, in July of 1994, 24 and a half years ago, after she had just turned 18 years old. She was 18 years and 1 month old. And she was charged with promotion of prostitution of an adult because she arranged a liaison between two consenting adults inside a strip club, one of whom happened to be an undercover police officer inside the club on a sting. She was admittedly in the wrong place at the wrong time and made a very dumb decision as an 18-year-old and has paid the price for it for over two decades since then. 1 month after she was charged, represented by a public defender who she barely knew, she pled guilty on the advice of counsel to the promotion of prostitution charge, which carries a felony offense, but with a stay of imposition. She was ordered to serve 3 years of probation, which she did successfully. And in April of 1997, 22 years ago, after completing those 3 years of probation, the felony charge was reduced to a misdemeanor. The misdemeanor is what she stands convicted of today. She's been off paper for this charge for 22 years. Under the Data Practices Act, Section 13.87, Subdivision 1B, the criminal records related to this charge and conviction, the arrest records, the charging records, everything related to the plea agreement are not public.
I understand. I agree with you completely on that, Mr. Dillon, but the legislature's expressed a different policy decision in terms of whether or not this conviction can be disregarded by the departments here. So, you know, so they've made one policy determination on the data practices, but the legislature's made another policy determination on these matters. That may have a very unfair application in this case, but how do we get around? I mean, I guess I don't really understand the analogy to the data practices in terms of separation of powers. If we're respecting what the policy determinations are of another branch of government, they've clearly made that policy determination, which has an adverse consequence to your client in this case. So what's the significance of the analogy to the data practices?
The impact of the Data Practices Act in an inherent authority expungement case was a very big part of the analysis in the MDT case. And I think MDT is our roadmap here. Council agrees, I agree, MDT does not close the door to inherent authority expungement of executive branch records. The court does not say it cannot happen.
But it says the opening that door is pretty small.
Don't disagree. Don't disagree, but
this court would be making new law in some respects if we decided that this should fall within the district court's inherent authority.
I think the court would be applying MDT in a way that it has not been applied before, admit, but I don't think the court would be making new law. I think
we're not allowed to, that's probably a good thing.
Yeah, exactly, right? So, and I'll agree. I think MDT was wrongly decided, but that's not for this court.
Yeah, as the Supreme Court has reminded us, you know, a few weeks
ago.
Mr. Dillon, you know, I have to admit I share, first of all, the remarkably favorable facts that your client has in favor of her. But I must admit I also share Judge Bjorkman's concerns. So if we're going to do this, it's either core judicial function or constitutional rights. You know, for better or worse, it seems like core judicial function, it's not to help people get jobs, you know, whether that's right or wrong.
Right.
You know, it seems like that's not appropriate. So then what's the argument on the constitutional, the equal protection? Well, what's your argument in any way you'd like to make it on the constitutional issue?
Well, I think both prongs are in play here.
Okay.
I do think core judicial function is in play. I think the constitutional prong is also in play, and I'll address both of them. I'll start with core judicial function. The State versus CA and MDT reiterate that controlling judicial branch records to remedy unfairness and provide complete relief to a petitioner would be, in proper circumstances, an appropriate exercise of inherent judicial authority.
But we're not talking about judicial records.
We are talking about, well, the judicial records, though, the plea agreement, which, you know, with a stay of imposition results in a conviction, that is the record, and that's a judicial record. It is housed in the executive branch now, but that is a judicial record, and that is the record that we seek to have expunged. My client could still pass the background check, would still pass the background check, if she stood simply charged. It is the conviction that stands in her way, and the conviction is a judicial record. And I think you made an apt point in that, you know, that the conviction itself and the stay of adjudication was accepted by the court. In that sense, you know, the plea agreement has to be accepted by the court. The court could have said no, and so in that sense, the court does have some involvement in whether or not a stay of adjudication versus imposition is an appropriate plea agreement.
But isn't that kind of the position that Justice Anderson took in his dissent? Was it in MDT? And the majority rejected that. You know, yeah, maybe the record was recreated in the judicial branch, but it's now in an executive branch record because they've adopted it. And, you know, I think if you'd have had four votes that agreed with Justice Anderson, maybe obviously the result of MDT would have been different. But it seems to me like your argument somewhat asks us to adopt the dissent in MDT, which we obviously cannot do.
I'm not asking that. I'm asking you to apply the majority opinion, and I think the majority opinion does leave the door open to expunging executive branch records when necessary to remedy unfairness and provide complete relief to the petitioner. That's how I read the case, and the court may read it differently, and reasonable minds disagree all the time. But, you know, I think the facts of this case and the facts of MDT are very different in a way that is meaningful to this unfairness aspect that the court has to grapple with, and the court does grapple with in MDT. The distinctions here are this. First of all, MDT, the petitioner in that case, applied for an expungement 3 years after she was discharged from probation. My client applied and so the records by definition in MDT were still public and would remain public for 12 more years after she filed her petition. That was a big deal to the court. And I agree, the other aspect was the expungement statute. Those were the two policy issues in MDT. And both policy issues weighed against the inherent authority expungement in that case. Here you've got legislative policy pronouncements that are at odds with each other. I agree, my client does not have a pathway to a statutory expungement because of the way in which her case was settled. But the Data Practices Act would say that now, after the passage of time, those records are so stale that they are no longer public. they're non-public. And so we are asking the court to simply seal records that the legislature has already determined are not public and haven't been public for 6 years. So that's one big distinction. The other big distinction in this case that was not present in MDT, and it's something that the district court pointed out a couple of different times in its order, is that there's no nexus between what my client was charged and ultimately pled guilty to and the impact that she now faces 25 years later.
Well, is that really a situation for us? I mean, it seems to me the legislature have said there is a connection. I mean, 245C.15 says this is these commission of a designated offenses, and including the offense your client was convicted of, is a permanent disqualification, that the legislature has seen a link between someone who commits these types of crimes and risk to people of having those type of people with those criminal background come into their home. I mean, is it really for us to supplant what the legislature has identified as a policy connection?
I think there's a difference between the policy connection and the actual facts of this case. The district court looked at all the facts and circumstances and said, look, you know, I understand what she was charged of. I understand what she pled guilty to when she was 18 years old. There's no, the whole point of the disqualification statute is to protect vulnerable people, right? People who receive services through DHS healthcare programs. My client's never been a threat to vulnerable people. She was 18 years old in an adults-only environment and arranged, was a middleman, if you will, between two consenting adults. She's never been a threat to any vulnerable people.
Well, if she wasn't subject to the 240C.15 subdivision 1, if it was a, less than permanent disqualification, those are arguments she could make to DHS. But are they arguments to make to the court when we're not talking about judicial branch records? We're talking about records held by DHS and the Department of Health.
Yes, I think there are appropriate arguments to make to the court. I think at the end of the day, the court, the Supreme Court has recognized this court has inherent judicial authority to expunge executive branch records. We haven't seen the case yet where the court has said this is it, but at some point we're going to see it. And at the end of the day, as the branch of government that is here to decide the fairness of the criminal system as it relates to someone like my client at the end of the day, right? And to administer justice, right? I mean, there are co-equal branches here, but at the end of the day, the court has to have some power to say, this is not fair, this is not right. There is a fundamental unfairness to my client. The district court has looked at the facts of this case and said, boy, this just doesn't seem like the right thing to do.
What's the constitutional rights argument? Because it seems like that's been a bit of a moving target.
Well, so I would agree with counsel. The district court could have been a little bit clearer and crisper in defining similarly situated groups of folks.
But what's your argument?
My argument is twofold. One is a timing issue, okay? We have petitioned to have the BCA records expunged, right? So when DHS does its background studies, DHS, if an individual has never been subject to a background study before, an application for a background study is submitted to DHS. DHS then contacts BCA and says, BCA, send us what you have on this subject, okay? If BCA does not have records, either because that person has no criminal history or because the BCA records have already been sealed or expunged, DHS receives nothing, and the person passes the background study, okay? My client, there was a background study done on my client before she petitioned for expungement.
Back in 2005, isn't it? That mean
correct.
That's why she
correct.
Had to leave the job she'd held for 3 years.
Absolutely correct.
So DHS already has the record.
DHS has had the record since 2005, okay? Had my client waited until 2018 to petition to have the BCA records sealed and expunged, we would not be here. That's what we did. And the BCA has not appealed.
How does that violate equal protection?
Let me finish. BCA has not appealed. The BCA record, so if BCA were the only administrative agency opposing our petition, the district court has done what it's done. It has sealed BCA's records. BCA has not appealed. If my client were to be the subject of a background study today for the first time, BCA would have no records to provide to DHS because those records are sealed. Because she applied, because she was the subject of a background study before she successfully petitioned for a BCA expungement, she is not the same. So it's the difference, the similarly situated people treated differently. It all depends on whether you petition for expungement successfully of the BCA records before or after you become the subject of a background study.
And I assume you're referring to the fact that that it wouldn't be available today is because the legislature amended the statute to provide sort of a three-year, or it's my understanding the legislature amended the statute to change it to give people a break, new people coming up. Perhaps I'm wrong. But if I am right, I mean, if the legislature wants to change the law in terms of going forward or changing, you know, providing a new window, you know, isn't that their call? And if it doesn't go back 20 years, it doesn't go back 20 years, it only goes back 2 years.
I'm not sure I follow the question.
Well, let's say I'm right and the legislature amended the law to say, you know, let's say the legislature passes a law tomorrow and it says, you know what? All the people who had this type of crime in the last 3 years, now it's not going to disqualify them. Okay.
Okay.
But it's just for the last 3 years, and it doesn't go back 20 years, or whatever period of time your client has. Someone comes in and makes an equal protection argument. Well, you're treating these people differently in the last 3 years than you were 20 years ago. And isn't the response to that, well, if the legislature wants to change and provide a window for people here, they can do that without violating equal protection?
I think we're talking about different things. What I'm talking about does not have anything to do with what the legislature...
Well, what is the equal protection argument? What is the similarly situated people you're saying are being treated differently?
Same people charged with the same crime, same conviction history, entirely the same as my client.
Right.
The similarly situated people are different in just when they successfully petition for a BCA expungement, whether or not the background study comes first or second. If the background study check comes before the BCA expungement, the person will be permanently disqualified. If the background study comes after the BCA expungement, they will not be. Similarly, in every other way. And that's because of the way in which these background studies are done. DHS is not a repository of criminal records until they ask for them from BCA. Once they get them from BCA, now they have them and they say, we can't unsee them. In my client's case, they've had them since 2005. They can't unsee them unless they're told to. DHS and MDH have appealed in this case. They don't think they should be forced to unsee the records. BCA has not. And in MDT, there's a site in the record, footnote 10 in the dissent, that in 2010 alone, BCA received 223 orders to seal its records based on the court's inherent authority.
Is there any reason to believe that if BCA had joined in the appeal that the district court or that this court would differentiate between those three entities for purposes of applying inherent judicial authority?
Hard for me to say. I don't know. BCA is not here. I can't speak for
BCA.
Right,
but I mean, is there any other arguments that they would be different in terms of the facts and law relevant to exercise of inherent judicial authority?
I don't think the facts or law would be different, but the fact that BCA is not here making any arguments on its own behalf, which it could be, it's represented by the Attorney General's office in any event, just like DHS and MDT. The fact that they're not here makes it even more arbitrary, in my opinion.
Thank you, Mr. Dillon. Mr. Dietrich, you'll have the last word, sir.
Just want to point out a couple things very quickly here. So, first of all, the Data Practices Act does not affect the disqualification under Minnesota Statute Section 240, Chapter 245C. So so the district court's expungement order still overrides a legislative policy judgment, regardless of that Data Practices Act that respondent brings up. Second, respondent talked about the court's ability to expunge records created by the judicial branch. And I just wanted to point out that MDT makes a very clear distinction between records held by the judiciary and records created by the judiciary that are held by the executive branch. And specifically, the court stated, and I'm quoting here, but the authority the judiciary has to control its own records does not give the judiciary inherent authority to reach into the executive branch to control what the executive branch does with records held in that branch, even when those records were created in the judiciary. And then finally, I wanted to address the equal protection argument that a respondent was just addressing. First of all, I think that's a circular argument. It presupposes that respondent is entitled to expungement of executive branch records. Because she's not entitled to expungement of executive branch records, she can't be similarly situated to someone who previously received expungement of executive branch records. And then the other thing I wanted to point out for the court is that under
section... about his argument that depending on the timing, you are treated differently? I mean, I think that's, and I think that was what Mr. Dillon was pointing out. Depending on when the background study is asked for, you either, there either are these records or there are not these records, and that seems to be somewhat arbitrary. Why is that portion of the argument flawed?
Well, Your Honor, again, that assumes that respondent is entitled to expunge those executive branch records. So if she wasn't entitled to expunge those executive branch records, that timing issue isn't there. And just because the BCA chose not to appeal here doesn't suddenly create a constitutional issue that wouldn't otherwise exist. And I also wanted to point out that under 609A.03 subdivision 7A4, the commissioner actually has access to expunged records as long as the expungement order wasn't specifically directed to the commissioner. So I think the fundamental premise of that argument, which is that if those records had been expunged, DHS couldn't get them from the BCA, is not accurate. So, Your Honors, if there are no further questions, I would again just ask that the court reverse the expungement order of the district court. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Mr. Dietrich. Thank you, Mr. Dietrich.